Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Good morning, world. This is AM 1230 WFAS, Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. I am Roy G. Here with Bruce Hall, as always, here after another, I guess this would be a surprising Saturday of college football.
It was, there was a lot going on. I was lucky enough last night to, of course, we had a small election that went on. We're not going to talk politics or I'd start throwing stuff. But I got to say one thing about the election. If you ever look at a map, and this is not a good thought when you think about it, but if you ever look at a map of all the different counties mm-hmm. that voted a majority for one person, if you're in the real estate business, you want to be on the losing end of this one because you got about 93% of the real estate in the country. Of course, the other side has the army. That kind of sucks.
I'm actually not allowed to talk about this subject.
So. I'm not going to talk about it either. But I want to say what I did. I want to say what I did do this last night. I went to the United States Marine Corps' 237th birthday party. Since 1775, Marines have basically patrolled the streets and been there for everybody for us. Commandant General James Amos should be the President of the United States. This guy was one of the best speakers I ever heard. He was the MC of ceremonies. The special guest was Johnny Jones, a staff sergeant, double amputee, who walked up there with his prosthetic legs. And he is one of the most important people in the country because he's taken upon himself to help the wounded warriors across not only Marines everywhere in every service. And I just want to take my hat off to all of those guys and thank you for inviting my wife, who the Marine Corps is her account. But General Amos was phenomenal. There were so many generals there and you know, young Marines. The youngest Marine that was there was born 2 years after my son, who's still in college. And they do a thing at the birthday party where they cut this cake. I swear it was like 150, 200-pound cake. They wheel it up to the stage, and they pull out a saber, and they cut the cake with a saber. And they even gave us, the Marines, I don't know if you know this or not, people listening in, but the Marine Corps, among all the great things they do, when they give gifts to anybody, they're always weapons.
Are they really?
So everybody at the place, 3,300 people, had one of the nicest looking knives you've ever seen. That's like a Swiss Army knife, only a lot nicer than a Swiss Army knife.
Because Swiss Army knives are made in Swiss. Well, Switzerland? Is that where they're made?
Yeah, but this one's
cheap people.
You guys need to shut up and pay attention to me when I'm talking. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. I want to thank everybody I met there. Just you know, the greatest thing about this country, Roy, which mm-hmm. you'll figure out once you get a little older, is that you know, we do stand up for the little guy. And whether we agree with the politics of the nation or not, you know what? We're all in this together. We've all got the same president for another 4 years. We've all got the same vice president. That's sad to think about for the next 4 years because that guy's just, you know what with ears. But I got to tell you, it looks like Hillary Clinton's stepping down. We are talking politics a little bit.
I'm actually.
Well, you don't have to talk. You're too stupid to talk about it anyway. I'll talk to Matt. He's 4 years.
I'm not allowed to talk politics. I'm not allowed to.
Well, I'm not going to talk about it either. We're done. All right, that's my scoop. The Marine Corps, 237 years. Thank you very much. Let me tell you, the Marine Corps turned World War II around. Iwo Jima, mm-hmm. the Battle of Pacific after Pearl Harbor. It's like General Amos said, you know, we didn't have much. You know, they basically destroyed our fleet, And we let America know by going to Guadalcanal and battling in the Pacific. My father was there. I mean, they didn't have food rations for 6 weeks. They ate orange marmalade. My dad said he could never even look at orange marmalade after that for 6 weeks. But they fought. They fought hard, and they defeated and destroyed the Japanese in the Pacific. And, you know, that war could have lasted a lot longer than 4 years. And as it turns out, 4 years was all it took, and, you know, the rest is history. But anyway, there we are.
And to tie that into sports, this weekend,
did Japan play a football game?
I
bet they got beat.
There were some basketball teams who played in the Armed Forces Classic. Basketball tournament was played on the aircraft carrier.
Yeah,
for the
that was great, except for they forgot about condensation.
Yeah, well, that'll happen.
They need to bring a meteorological person and get them involved next year. But they did play the first half, right?
That was in Ramstein, Germany. Well, they played the whole game.
CJ went to that. Chris Johnson went to that.
Georgetown played in it, and
I think Mike Wise might have gone to it.
UConn and Michigan State was the big matchup in that game. So that was very cool. A big weekend on a couple of different aircraft carriers, and very cool. Very cool. And last year, it was UNC and Michigan State. So Michigan State came back again and played on another aircraft carrier.
You know who else was it that Mooch was there? Was Michigan State one of the teams yesterday?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? That's why Mooch goes there. You know his best friend is the basketball coach for Michigan State.
Oh, yeah?
That's Steve Mariucci's Mooch, everybody. If you watch NFL Network. And he's on everything.
Well, they got
Steve
upset.
Steve Mariucci, you know what? We were just talking about how many NFL coaches are probably going to lose their job this year. Steve Mariucci would have his pick of where he wants to go, I think.
Well, it's going to be
he might go to Philly. He might go to Philly. Andy Reid will not. Let me just say this right now. I'm going to say it right now. Andy Reid, I love Andy, but Andy, you will not be in Philly next year. If you plan on being there, please make other plans because you're not going to be there.
Yeah.
Especially if Dallas puts it on you today.
It's going to be sad. I mean, Andy Reid, he's done a lot for the Philadelphia Eagles. Let's keep in mind that this is a franchise.
14 straight playoff appearances.
Historically bad franchise.
14 straight playoff appearances.
And how many Super Bowls do the Eagles have?
They've only been to one.
And who took him there? Mr. Andy Reid.
Andy took him there.
He's done so much. They
were in four championship games in a row.
He's done so much for this.
Very similar to the Buffalo Bills. Now, the Buffalo Bills won four championships in a row with Marv Levy. Formerly of William & Mary Indians. I don't even think they're called the Indians anymore.
They're the greatest second place team.
We're called the Redskins. That's okay, but they won't even call themselves the Indians because they don't want to make anybody upset.
But Andy Reid, like we were talking about before the show, in our pre-show discussions and all that kind of stuff.
God, what's with his mustache? If he would shave, they'd win.
Did you notice that Andy Reid and Mike Holmgren have never been seen in the same place at the same time?
You know,
they could very well be the same person.
Can I be honest with you? I can't. We've got a phone call.
All right.
Hello.
Hi, it's Doc Klein.
All right. Alex.
Oh, hey, Alex. I heard all about you, buddy.
How's it going, buddy? This is Alex Klein. He is one of the youngest, if not the youngest, national recruiting analyst, college and high school basketball. He runs the recruiting scoop on Yahoo.com and part of Rivals.com. Alex, thanks for joining us, buddy.
No problem. Happy to be here, guys.
So we're actually are we going to push this? Are we going to push the break?
You know what? Let's do this. All right, you tell me when we take the break. I want to give Alex a segment.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Alex, can you hold on for us?
Absolutely.
All right. Awesome. Hold on. For the first time in Alex, you need to hear this. This is very important. For the first time in generations, Alex, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and to protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to AM 1230 WFAS. We'll be back in a minute.
On Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And we're back here on AM 1230 WFAS. This is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. We are joined here by Alex Klein. Alex is the youngest national recruiting analyst for the high school and college rankings. He hosts the Mary Klein Classic. It's a cancer research all-star event for high school basketball players. Alex, thanks for joining us, buddy.
No problem. Happy to be here, guys.
Alex, where do you live?
I live in New Jersey, but currently reside in Syracuse, New York, where I attend Syracuse University and go to the Newhouse School, where I major in broadcast journalism.
Well, that's definitely a good thing to be majoring in. I wish I had done the same thing myself. I was a health and PE major, unfortunately. Listen, let me ask you a question. You didn't get involved in any of that below sea level housing stuff in New Jersey, did you? Are you okay? Family good?
No, we're good. We're good. Yeah, I mean, you know, luckily we didn't suffer much damage at all. You know, just lost power for a little while. But, you know, it's unfortunate what happened, you know, down the shore and
yeah, I mean, it
New
is.
York area.
We get that all the time on the Outer Banks of North Carolina. We kind of get used to it. But, you know, they haven't had a big storm up in New Jersey, Long Island, New York area, even Boston, I guess, got a little bit. Hey, listen, let's get started on this basketball. Talk to me a little bit about who you probably have your top 10 list, right? Have you got? For recruits for next year?
Yeah, I'd say so.
They're signing kids so early now. Aren't they verbaling like in the ninth grade now and tenth grade for basketball?
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean it's not as high as people make it out to be, but there are occasionally kids who will, you know, make their college decisions come eighth grade, ninth grade, tenth grade. So, you know, it's definitely tough, but I think, you know, if they know where they want to go and it's a stable situation, then, you know, you got to go where your heart wants. But, you know, there are times when that decision isn't so great and, you know, certain people aren't going to lead you to that right decision. So, you know, it's definitely best to wait it out. I usually advise kids, you know, if they ask, you know, wait it out till the end of your junior year, you know, prior to your senior year. That way, you know, the coach's stability there, you know the system, you know that's the right place, and you've visited there multiple times.
Now, most of the kids who have already been recruited for the 2013 year, 13-14 for next year, they're all done, right? In other words, those guys are already signed, sealed, and delivered. There aren't two or three guys out there right now that still are uncommitted, are there?
Oh, there are plenty left. There are plenty left.
Is that right? I never knew that.
This coming week is actually National Signing Week. So this is the first time when all the kids who have already committed are going to be able to commit, sign their letter of intent for that school. That's the fall signing period. There's also the spring signing period in April, which, you know, kids who aren't sure yet, such as Jabari Parker, Andrew Wiggins.
Yep, I was just about to ask you about Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of them. There are a lot of them left. I mean, especially in the top 100, there's about 18 or so left, and then obviously tons and tons of mid-major kids who could raise their stock this year with great high school seasons.
So speaking of Andrew Wiggins, he's one of the big names in high school basketball these days. He played for Team Canada in the Nike High School Basketball World Tournament that went on in D.C. earlier this year that I was at. He lit up the show and brought him to the finals. Unfortunately, they lost, but he's still one of these big recruit names out there. Where do you see him ending up in the college rankings?
It's definitely a two-team race between Florida State and Kentucky. Kentucky's been on him a while, obviously. You know, it's Kentucky. You know, great team, amazing.
Great recruiter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's one of the best. Yep.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So that, you know, speaks words to them. And, you know, Florida State, that's where his father played. That's where his mother went and ran track. His best friend is going to play basketball there. So, you know, it's not all about Kentucky. I think this is a real two-team race with North Carolina on the outskirts.
So speaking of Kentucky, they squeaked one out against Maryland this past weekend.
Wow.
And
it was a great game.
Yeah, it was very, and it went back and forth. Now, is this any cause for concern as Kentucky? I know that they're in a sense of a rebuilding stage with their starters basically all going to the NBA. So is this any cause for concern to Kentucky, or do you think that this is just an early season slip-up, even though they won, so it's not that big of a slip-up. But everyone expected them to blow out Maryland.
I mean, Maryland's a quality team. That's a very quality team that's rebuilding in the ACC, and obviously the late addition of Des Wells in the starting lineup was very helpful, as well as the emergence of Alex Len, who really boosted his draft stock. But no, I mean, I wasn't expecting Kentucky to have that much this year. Obviously, they lack chemistry. They're not as talented as they were last year. They're very talented this year, and they could be very good, but, you know, you have to put everything together. You know, obviously, Nerlens Noel struggling early kind of hurt them, but, you know, you look at freshman Willie Cauley-Stein, he played very well. Gerard Paulson, a former walk-on, he played excellent. Mm-hmm. He came up clutch for them at the point guard spot. So, you know, guys like that need to step up. This isn't a team where you have, you know, Michael Gilchrist and Anthony Davis running the show. So you give him some time.
And let me ask you a question, Alex. There's a kid out that had agreed to go to UCLA, and he was just determined ineligible, Shabazz Muhammad. What's the deal with that? What do you have any idea what happened that made him ineligible by the NCAA?
What happened was his dad, who is also his AAU coach, they wanted to take a couple – no, I mean, he's a good guy. They took two unofficial visits or a couple unofficial visits to Duke and North Carolina, and unfortunately the money that was raised, I guess, to take those visits, you know, through airplanes and hotels, that was through, you know, two money agents or whatever the term may be. But, yeah, unfortunately, that's the major holdup in this. And, you know, the fathers admit it happened, so it's not in denial. That's why it's so obvious, and that's why, you know, currently his eligibility is really up in the air.
Now, is he a freshman at UCLA right now?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay, so he's ineligible for the rest of the season or just till the end of the semester?
No, it's really undetermined at this point. It could be one game. It could be an entire season. There's no real determination at this point. The NCAA is trying to figure out. UCLA is trying to figure out. We should know more soon. But it's an unfortunate situation because, you know, he would be an amazing asset to UCLA basketball and for college basketball in general.
Well, that's great, though. So let me ask you this. Who do you like? I mean, obviously, you spend a lot of time looking at these kids and kind of figuring out where everybody's going to end up. Is it pretty much just the rich getting richer when it comes to the best recruits? I mean, is it going to be top 10 programs that are going to be getting all those kids, or does Maryland have a chance? You know,
Definitely. I think the smaller schools are really working their way up, and, you know, like, it all depends on location. It depends on, you know, style of play. I mean, just this year alone, a number of the guys who are in the top 10 are all heading to the SEC. You have three kids heading to Kentucky. You have two kids heading to Florida. Shoot, you have one kid heading to Arkansas and Bobby Portis. So, you know, it really depends. It's just every year it changes. NC State's building an amazing class. Arizona, who fell off a couple years, is building an amazing class. Even LSU, who hasn't been to the Final Four in years, you know, they're building a tremendous class under their new coach, Johnny Jones. So I think it's about the right person at the right time.
Can you have
the right coach that, you know, sells the right appeal to, you know, these recruits who may be local, who may be national?
Do you think that the Big East, kind of falling apart, do you think that has anything to do with the expand in recruiting across all the conferences?
It still has an impact for certain schools. I mean, I feel like, you know, obviously the ACC is now the conference to beat when it comes to recruiting, since you have Maryland, Duke, North Carolina, soon to be Syracuse, mm-hmm. and Pittsburgh. You know, the Big East is definitely taking a hit simply because, you know, the competition isn't there as much. You know, UConn's still very present, obviously, with Kevin Ollie's huge win against Michigan State. You know, Louisville's still there. Marquette is bringing in a tremendous class. Notre Dame's bringing in a tremendous class, but hey, they're moving to the ACC as well. So, you know, it's tough for the Big East. It's going to be a tough couple of years for them to rebuild.
Now, Syracuse, you talked about Syracuse moving to the ACC. Now, this is their last year in the Big East, and they have had the Big East tournament at Madison Square Garden. It's been a big pool. A lot of people have been talking about maybe the Madison Square Garden no longer be the host of this with the less and less schools that are moving in. There's not the big-name schools, the big draw. Do you think that Madison Square Garden is the future home for the Big East Conference tournament?
I would hope so. I mean, you look at the tradition there. It's, you know, amazing. Through all the amazing tournaments and games that have been there, you know, these things change, though. I mean, it's a changing, booming industry. So obviously when you lose two of your top teams, or three of your top teams, Notre Dame, Pittsburgh, and Syracuse, it definitely hurts. You know, it hurts because, you know, everyone loves those UConn-Syracuse matchups. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's definitely up in the air. I mean, I haven't heard any talk, but I think, you know, it's certainly possible just because the Big East is kind of falling apart. But, you know, let's see how the season goes. Let's see which Big East teams really step up when, you know, conference play comes around.
Alex, let me ask you a question. How do people get a hold of you? You've got a website. I know you're on Facebook, too. Can you give our listeners some idea of how they can follow you?
Oh, yeah, they can follow me on Twitter at The Recruit Scoop, TheRecruitScoop. I can be reached on email at maryklineclassic@gmail.com. Always willing to talk with some fans over email. Those are probably the two best ways of reaching me.
Very good.
That sounds great. Listen, thanks so much for coming online with us today, coming on board with us. Listen, Timmy, I'm sitting here at my computer and I'm talking online. I really appreciate you. Can we use you from time to time and give you a buzz?
Absolutely.
That sounds great, buddy. I hear you. Don't you have a blog that you do all the time, pretty much weekly?
Yeah, through Yahoo. It's the
that's the Yahoo thing. Okay.
Yeah, it's the Recruit Scoop through Yahoo and Rivals. It's so if you guys haven't checked it out, therecruitscoop.com. Alex, thanks a lot, buddy, for coming on, and we will definitely catch up with you in the weeks to come.
No problem, guys. Take
care. See you later, Alex.
Bye bye.
Good kid. Try to come clean. Got intervened by a dream filled with screams. We had a 360-degree turn on the globe. But now you got me running around my area code. You got me running in a cyclone. You got me running in a cyclone. You got me running in a cyclone. Over overdose and I'm in the zone. You got me running in a cyclone. You got me running in a cyclone. You got me running in a cyclone. Over overdose.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com or by going to Facebook.com/BruceHallSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
They are who we thought they were.
And we're back here on AM 1230 WFAS. Big thanks again to Alex Klein
Dennis
for coming
Green
on with us. And,
yeah, that's a good kid right there to know.
You guys definitely want to check him out. And as soon as he was heading off, we said, we should have talked Syracuse, the big upset.
Yeah, big upset, my bud. Syracuse, you know, Syracuse beats one or two great teams every year, and then they lose to, Columbia.
Yeah. they had WVU's number.
I'm just kidding about Columbia. They don't play Columbia.
They had WVU's number. I definitely, have seen Syracuse upset some teams. But
they always, you know what? They always get great athletes at Syracuse. Syracuse is one of the top universities for athletics in the country. Always is.
Mr. McNabb quarterbacked at Syracuse
University. Yeah, he wasn't bad.
Not bad. But we'll start since we are going into college football, I guess we could start talking about our top 10 that we do every week.
Hey, by the way, let me just tease everybody. Can I throw a teaser in here?
Yeah,
Bruce Bochy is going to be on the air second half of the show. He's going to either come on at 11 or 11:05 or 11:10 or 11:15 or 11:20.
Or 11:09.
I actually have him on the line right now on my phone, and I'm going to find out what's best for him. But we're going to have the manager of the World Series champion San Francisco Giants, who have won two out of the last three World Series.
Very cool.
And he's going to be on, and we're going to talk to him for a while later in the show. But, yeah, let's talk college football. Let's go ahead and get that stuff knocked out. We got a big, big day in NFL football, and I had a pretty good week last week. You had a pretty good week last week. I'm getting it turned around. It's been a tough year, the first half, but I'm starting to kind of get the feeling that, I pretty much have got my – I got the handle on three or four teams. And if you got a handle on three or four teams, sometimes you just have to watch those three or four teams. Mm-hmm. And unless something just jumps way out at you or something comes up, you leave everybody else alone because they're not dependable. I yeah. like to play teams that I can either depend on them sucking or I can depend on them being a pretty solid team. And what's happening now is the solid teams are separating themselves – from the average teams, mm-hmm. and that's happening in college football yeah. now. So let's start. You want to start with number one? Let's talk. Let's go 1 to 10.
You want to start? You want to start with number one?
No, you start with 10. Let's go 10 to 1.
We can start with number one if you want, but I was going to stop. I was going to end with number one since there was a little bit of a story to go there. But number 10, Thursday night, that was Florida State beating Virginia Tech, and I think there's a bigger story here than what was advertised as
right.
Virginia Tech now is 4-6. They have two games left. That could render them non-bowl eligible this year, which it looks like they're going to be non-bowl eligible, which is a big story for Virginia Tech because I think it's been 19 years of bowl plays.
You knew that they were going to have a drop this year a little bit because they had so many guys going to the pros last year, good players too, and most of them were juniors. So we'll see what happens. And you're absolutely right. You know, with Blacksburg being 3.5 hours from where we are. That's big news. A lot of kids in the Mid-Atlantic states go to Virginia Tech. I mean, Virginia Tech is a big school, and you're right; they may not be there. Absolutely yeah. not.
It's very. I mean, Virginia Tech. I've always said that the ACC has always been overrated, and Virginia Tech was one of those teams who's been overrated throughout the years. But
it wasn't that long ago that Virginia Tech was an independent school. They mm-hmm. didn't have an affiliation with a conference. Do you
yeah.
remember?
Yeah.
I remember when they first got in the ACC. That was big news.
Yeah.
You know, that was big news. Now they're an anchor in the ACC. They really are. You can almost always rely on them for all sports. They have a great wrestling team even. They have a very good football team. They've got a very good basketball program there. Mm-hmm. They have a very good baseball program. They have good sports. They have good soccer. They have good women's sports.
It looks like Virginia Tech, the last time they were not in a bowl was 1992. If this source is correct, it is VirginiaTechFootball.com, so I think it should be. So 1992, the last time that Virginia Tech did not play in a bowl game, and it looks like 2013 will be the next year. So the streak snaps.
They're out of the top of everything. They're probably down there with East Carolina around number 80 or something.
Yeah, they're 4-6. They're not looking very good. So that number
I like to look at the teams that are between 60 and 100 in the Sagarin ratings. That's a lot of fun. All right, keep going. Who are we going to talk about?
Next up is the number 9 team, Louisville. We kind of discussed this as well.
They'll be number 29 next week.
Losing to Syracuse.
Right.
Where he's
not very good.
The home of Mr. Alex Klein, who we just had on. Syracuse beat him up pretty good, 45-26. This is two teams that have a lot of history, so no real surprise here, but I guess this just shows that Louisville is not who many thought they were. Number 8 was South Carolina. The old ball coach beat up on Arkansas 38-20. So a good win for them there. LSU, fresh off of the Alabama upset, didn't drop very far. They only dropped two spots. But they beat Mississippi State, who was ranked number 21, 37-17. Number 6, Florida, who dropped a little bit. Some people had them as the number 2 team in the country. They squeaked by Louisiana Lafayette 27-20. Georgia, the Bulldogs beat Auburn. I mean, that was a whooping, 38-0. Notre Dame, fresh off a squeak from Pitt University last week with that last minute touchdown, 21-6 over Boston College, who was wearing their Veterans Day uniforms. Then we get into the big dogs, Oregon, which Bruce, as you alluded, was a good game for
they,
the first half.
You know what? All everybody talked about yesterday was how big a smile that Oregon's head coach would have on his face when he looked up and saw that final in the Alabama game. And sure enough, you know, they started out, they were up 24-10 at halftime, fairly good game. Then all of a sudden, boom, here comes the Oregon Ducks. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you something. That could be your national championship team this year. They might get to play Alabama. Who knows where Alabama will actually be?
It was a little ironic, I guess, if I'm using the word correctly. There's the Alanis Morissette version, and then there's the actual version of the word ironic. So ESPN had on a couple people. They had an Oregon fan and a Kansas State fan to do picks yesterday, and they were arguing about how the what-if scenario if they got to play in the national championship. And then a couple hours later, Alabama loses. Now Kansas State is probably going to be your number one team in the country, and Oregon is probably going to be your number two team in the country.
I would say that's probably going to happen even with the math. It'll be hard to say, but you know, Kansas State's got a couple of tough games left.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, you know, anything the Big 12
is a good conference. The Big 12 statistically is the best conference in America.
But there's a chance that Alabama, without losing another game, could actually get a rematch to get their number one standing back in the championship game.
Very true.
But it's got to be a perfect storm.
There's going to be talk about
it's got to be a perfect storm.
You talk about the need for a playoff, and I know I know that the system will be put in, but that's next year. Now you're looking at this year.
I think they should let you and I do it because there's no way they're going to figure this out.
It's like Alabama losing almost confuses things even more because now you have three teams who are very close, Kansas State, Oregon, and Notre Dame. Three teams, whereas Alabama, everyone kind of conceded that they were the number one team.
Well, you know what? I don't make any claims to be an NCAA superstar. I haven't really had a lot of success and even dealt with the NCAA because there's just so many contacts to make to do college football on Saturday and do NBA on Sunday. NFL on Sunday or NBA on Sunday.
Yeah, or NBA.
And that would even be more contacts to make. But my point is, after like seeing what happened to Alabama last night, I give up. Because I really didn't think anybody was going to beat those guys.
Johnny Football.
They were at – this kid, let me tell you something. They beat him with – but that wasn't what won the game. Rodney. Rodney's at home. Go open the door, Matt, go upstairs and open the door. Rodney's out front. Here's the thing right now. This is what's going on, okay? This kid – Texas A&M's defense was the difference in the game. There was so much their offense. It was their quarterback, yeah.
The interception late definitely helped
them out. Let me tell you what else.
Yeah.
Alabama couldn't press cover. They cover guys. Guys would catch the ball, and they would drag the defensive back. They looked like the Redskins, Alabama, last night. They were getting dragged 5 yards for a first down. You got to give it to Texas A&M. Deserved the game. They won it outright. Hell, they were up 20-0 in the game.
Now, I wouldn't be surprised to see Oregon or Kansas State or Notre Dame lose.
Where does this put Texas A&M in the – are they like 14th
they
or
were
15th?
They were 15th. Yeah. They're definitely going to move up.
They'll be a top 10 team.
Yeah. I was just about to say they will probably move into that number 9 slot that Louisville held. I wouldn't be surprised
I think Southlake's High School could move into that slot.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Texas A&M move into that 9 spot because this is such a big – win in the AP and in the BCS. I mean, Alabama was the number one team. They were the team to beat. Everyone said that they could beat pro teams, it was up for discussion about the pro team. And then they're saying, they're playing a different sport. I mean, we sat here on this show and said that Alabama played a different sport than everybody else. So it's going to be interesting, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the next number one team, whoever that is, whether it be Oregon, Notre Dame, or Kansas State. I think it should be Kansas State. I wouldn't be surprised to see the next number one team go down. I wouldn't be surprised to see the number two team, whoever that is, go down.
I think what we're looking at is five or six teams that are all going to be fighting it out. Let me ask you this. Who is the team right now that you think in the top six or seven that's the dark horse? That could end up getting into the game, but I mean, because you got to keep Alabama in the mix. You got to keep Kansas State in the mix. You got to keep Oregon in the mix. Southern Cal's gone. They're way gone.
Yeah.
They're done. Okay, in the SEC, who's still left?
There's Georgia, Florida.
LSU, where is LSU with all this
LSU
stuff?
LSU is...
Can they get back in the big game?
Well, LSU, it'll be hard. They have two losses. I think that Georgia has one, Florida has one, so that kind of opens the door back up for them since Alabama now has one loss. So the SEC does have a championship game within their conference, and now that weight of that game is more so than it was with Alabama going undefeated. If Alabama went undefeated and they had one loss in the championship game, whoever won that championship game most likely would not have played for the national championship. But now you add one loss in the column of Alabama and it matches the Georgia and the Florida, that SEC championship game, if we've seen anything, could be the gateway to the national championship. But if you're going to ask me about a dark horse, I don't think it goes as far as five or six. Florida, maybe, but I think Notre Dame is probably your dark horse here.
You know what? All I got to say is for a guy that didn't watch a lot of college football early in the year, I'm all over the TV when I'm home.
Yeah.
You know, it's wrestling season, though, so my voice is going to get a little weird here in the next 3 or 4 months. But I got to tell you guys something. This team I got this year, I don't have to scream so much. You're good kids.
That's good.
You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on AM 1230 WFAS. We're going to be back here shortly, but this is something very important I need to read for the first time in generations. The dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on AM 1230 WFAS.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or by emailing us at brucehallsports@gmail.com. Now, here's your host, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And we're back here on AM 1230 WFAS, Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. We're getting into our week 10 in the NFL, picks, plays, whatever you want to call them.
I'm pumped. I got up bright and early this morning. I was so pumped after that Marine Corps birthday party last night. I just don't know I don't even know how to act today. Of course, I was half asleep driving here. Tractor trailer nudged me over into the correct lane. It was pretty cool, actually. I've never been hit by a tractor trailer before. Yeah, he just touched me. No, I'm just kidding. This is Bruce Hall, and I'm delirious. Hey, listen, you know, speaking of delirious, Kyle Kachorik, our guy up in the box at WFAS. Hey, Kyle. Hey, thanks for setting us up with Boach. He's going to be calling in people at 11:30 Eastern time, and we're going to do probably 20-25 minutes with Boach. You know, the thing I love about talking, I love baseball. And, you know, I almost hate it when baseball's over. That's the one thing about the Super Bowl and Major League Baseball is when their final games are over, it's like they go into hibernation. You don't even – because these guys are so exhausted and so tired of every single day. They're traveling, working out, playing a game, doing this, doing that. And I go through kind of a period where – I hibernate too. And I got to tell you, it's Rodney. You know what, Matt? We got to hire another maid because she's not going out and letting him in. We got Dangerfield in the front. But anyway, I got to turn this down.
You just put it on silent, man.
I don't even know how to do that. You know, that would take intelligence. Hit my hand.
So, are we going to get into this NFL week plays?
Yeah, let's go. What's the first game?
All right, the first game.
It's not like I don't know them all. Go.
The Atlanta game, I guess, is I have first. Atlanta Falcons -2.5 of the New Orleans Saints.
What a wasted game for 1 o'clock.
The over-under here is 53.5.
Why are they playing at 1 o'clock? Why wouldn't that be a 4 o'clock game?
I don't know.
Or even
because Tim Tebow plays.
Well, they got to go. Well, now wait a minute, Tim Tebow?
Doesn't he play at 4 today? I'm pretty sure the Jets played 4.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean he's going to play.
Well, he'll get his snaps.
God, I hope so.
He'll get his FaceTime
sooner or later. I mean, these people in New York. You know what? This is what really makes me angry about New Yorkers. They wanted Tebow there. Everybody was all excited. You know, the thing about it is that he's not getting any snaps. How many snaps he got? 28? Is that right? 28?
Yeah, he's not getting many.
And you know, he does these little fake jump passes and punt formation, which I'm sure that's, you know, really kind of neat and everything. But when you got a quarterback that's like, what, third from the worst passing rating in football, why wouldn't you let Tebow have a shot? I mean, what could he do? Get you first downs? Get you touchdowns? How many touchdowns did Tebow score last year? That's your job in the next 30 seconds. I think that he had like what? How many rushing touchdowns in Denver?
Nine or ten? Yeah, 9 or 10.
I mean, how many rushing touchdowns does Mark Sanchez have in New York? How about 0, 1? Nothing's going on in New York. But I got to tell you Jets fans something. And you are listening to the game. I mean, you're listening to the show if you're a Jets fan because you're in our area. They're going to – I like them today. You know, they're loose as a goose. They're coming off of a bye week. The only thing I don't like is Bart Scott's not playing.
He had six rushing touchdowns last year in Denver.
Just seemed like more because it was Tebow.
And he had 12 passing touchdowns, so a total of 18 touchdowns last year.
And did they go to the playoffs? Oh, yeah.
Yep, they went to playoffs.
Yeah, he took John Fox, maybe, in my opinion, one of the worst head coaches in football. He took John Fox to the playoffs on his back. John Fox would have done anything for Tim Tebow. All right, well, so we're talking about the Saints.
Yep.
You got to take the over. I want to say it's 53.5, 54.
It is 53.5, yep.
Let me tell you something. They'll score that many points in the third quarter, okay? Take the over if you like exotics. As far as plays go, tease them down. You know, tease them with two other plays or one other play and tease that number into the 40s. And I think you got a really good play there. The thing that I do like about what's going on in New Orleans, they are playing better, by the way.
They're playing much better.
And you know what? Their first three games, they didn't play anybody and they were 0-3.
Yeah.
Since then, their schedule has been a beast. But they've won, like, you know, three out of the last four games. These guys are playing football, mm-hmm. in my opinion. And you know what? I just remembered I need to send you something, Matt. Here in about 5 minutes, you can go to BruceHallSports.com and read my blog. It's sitting in my computer right now. And I'm trying to get it over to Matt. But the thing about playing the Saints is I'm going to give you a stat, and this is a really lousy stat. Since 1950, the Saints they're getting ready to give up. They've given up over 400 yards their defense in eight straight games for the first time since 1950 in the NFL. And that's when nobody...
Yeah, that was when passing was a gimmick play, yeah. Right?
It's when Sammy Ball could throw left-handed better than the rest of the quarterbacks right-handed. No, you know what? Atlanta has gotten no respect. The Saints... I just like Atlanta in this game. I don't care. I just think Atlanta's going to win this game by 7 to 10 points. I think it's going to be a 41 game. 45-38, 48-38. You figure out the numbers. It's going to be a high-scoring game. But Atlanta has a defense.
Yeah.
The Saints do not have a defense.
No.
They don't. Now, the one thing that the Saints – and I'll tell you who to play today in fantasy league is you play Turner.
Yeah,
he's going to get the ball 25 to 30 times today. They're going to heat him up.
I have Mr. Turner,
burner. You're lucky if you do.
Fresh off of my team whooping you last week. I set my sights to the next week. 1 week at a time. That's the motto for my league, team.
I'm taking Atlanta. I'm taking the over. And you go to nhbowl.com. That's nationalhandicappersbowl.com. You can see my plays tomorrow, what I had. You go to my website, BruceHallSports.com. You'll be able to read who my plays are. Let's go to the next game.
Next up, we have the Miami Dolphins -6 over the Tennessee Titans. The over-under here is 44.
One of my favorite teams in the league and one of my least favorite teams in the league. Miami is giving 6 points up to a team who every single person on that team has been put on notice, from the coaches to the assistant coaches to every member of a 53-man roster, okay? Bud Adams wants to fire somebody because they had a 50-burger put up on them last week in Chicago, and they looked terrible. And I saw, the replay this week. Roy, they quit.
Yeah.
They quit. I mean, they did. And you know what? Now, Chris Johnson had over 100 yards, but he got 80 of them in the fourth quarter on a trap play when everybody was looking for him to throw the ball. That's how fast CJ still is. He can get to the corner and get to the sideline, and if you're not paying attention, he's gone. He still runs a 4-2 40-yard dash.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know what? I can't take Miami in this game because I really believe this is going to be like a 17-13 game. I'm worried about 6 points. Miami doesn't put a lot of points on the board.
They're not a big score. Reggie Bush is starting to get his legs back under him. He was hurt for a little bit, had some leg problems, ankle, leg, or whatever the actual injury was, but he's back, and according to Terry Bradshaw, well, we're not going to get into that because it raised a lot of whatever, but he's running all over the place. He looks great. He looks like his college self again. He looks like the draft pick that the Saints took on him.
And in my opinion, they have one of the a guy that's going to end up being one of the best NFL coaches anywhere, Joe Philbin. Joe Philbin's doing a great job down there.
He looks great. He does.
They love it down there. He's got two quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Hell, when he puts his backup quarterback in, he plays better than his starting quarterback. They got Ryan Tannehill, and they got Matt Moore.
Yep.
And I'm going to tell you something. There are plenty of teams in this league that don't have one guy as good as those two guys.
And we saw in the first couple weeks the impact – the Green Bay Packers had on losing Philbin. A lot of people thought that this was Aaron Rodgers. He's the MVP. This
you
offense
can
can't
though.
Be disrupted.
You can still see it, though.
They're back now,
yeah,
but it
are.
Took a little bit for them to get their wheels back under them.
I think it was Aaron Rodgers. And I'll be honest with you. Do you remember when, last year, when the Green Bay Packers looked unbeatable, they go to the playoffs and they get handled by New York?
Yeah.
Remember how un-Packer-like that game was?
Yeah.
That was because of all they went through for 2 weeks with the death of Joe's son.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and say this. If you're going to play this game, please play the right team. Play Miami. Do not play the other team. I'm passing on it. Next game, Matthew.
Next up is a game that you have started to hint at. And that is the New England Patriots -11 over the Buffalo Bills. The total here is 52.
Well, it's not 11.
Is it 13 now?
It's 13 and a half. I mean, people are hammering New England. Now, this creates a situation in the NFL that you don't like to mess with. Generally speaking, double-digit handicap numbers, double-digit favorites, don't cover 50% of the time.
It's moved again to 14, so
yeah,
this thing just keeps moving.
You know what? I took them anyway, and I've teased, you want to tease them down, possibly. I love the over. This was a game, however, that, this is a division game. So Buffalo, no matter what they're really like, they know what New England's going to do. New England's a team that's going to do whatever. They're not going to trick you. They're going to run it down your throat, and they're going to throw the football. They're going to Tom Brady you and Stephen Ridley you. And their defense is getting better.
Mm-hmm.
And they just made a deal for a guy. They ended up picking up somebody and giving them a draft choice. But I'm going to tell you right now, this New England team is trying so hard to get back into the playoffs and to the Super Bowl again. Tom Brady's not getting any younger. I see this game being a blowout. I really do. The weather's nice up there. It's going to be a beautiful day in New England. I say you take New England. Go ahead and give the damn points and just pray for no back end, but take the over to hedge. Because if Buffalo does backdoor, they're going to score 28 points again.
You're exactly right. If they're going to cover this 11, 12, 13, 14, whatever you have this line at, they're going to have to put points on the board. And that it almost assures the over.
Absolutely. Let's go to the next game.
The next game is, it is my straight cash homie.
Oh, my God.
B. Because if you follow me on Twitter, know that I had the Indianapolis Colts as my real straight cash homie. But
I don't believe him.
Since I love the listeners so much, this is my straight cash homie of this week. Yes, this is my straight cash homie of Sunday edition. The New York Giants -4 over the Cincinnati Bungles. The over-under here is 48.5.
Straight cash.
Does anybody have any idea what he does with that marijuana?
I don't know. I've been watching a lot of Breaking Bad, so
I think
probably
that the NFL knows what Randy Moss has done with marijuana.
That's good.
And I think the NFL knows what Randy Moss does with marijuana.
I love that guy. Caught a touchdown pass 2 weeks ago, right?
He's just robbing fantasy people.
Let me tell you something. Randy Moss looked like he was a legitimate 4.25/4.3 when he caught that touchdown pass. You remember that?
Yeah.
Did you see him break away from that linebacker who supposedly had run like a 4.46 in the combine? He looked like the guy was standing still. It was like the guy was standing still. He reached for him and he was gone. No, I tell you what, I love. Oh, that's right.
We're in the Giants.
You just did your straight cash.
Straight
cash
only, baby. And I like the Giants because we saw last week they were at home. They were dealing with a lot of issues with the hurricane. They're refocused now. They're playing against a Cincinnati team who really only has one threat in A.J. Green. The law firm has been very inconsistent this year. So if you can shut down A.J. Green, you shut down the Bengals.
Are we talking about the Ravens?
No, we're talking about the Giants.
The Giants? The Giants. My G-men? The only good.
On the road.
Can I tell you what? The only thing I like is they are a road team. We'll be back in a minute. We're going to pick up right where we left off, which is somewhere. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on AM 1230 WFAS.
Sound of what you want to be.
Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And we're back here on AM 1230 WFAS, Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
Yes, we are.
I just gave you my straight cash homie.
Hey, Dan, homie.
B, I guess, since it's I had Indianapolis on Thursday, if you follow me. But I gave you the New York Giants minus four over the Bengals. I guess we're on to the next here. The next game is the Denver Broncos minus four.
Well, now, wait a minute. Let's talk a little bit about the Bengals. And we're going to talk about the Giants, too. For those of you who think the Giants are done and Eli's got, you know, a rotator cuff problem. And, you know what I think it was? I think that, you know, when he went down in the lobby of his residence and took all those pictures of all the water in there, I think it just messed him up. You know what? I mean, the guy's from Louisiana. He knows what a flood is. He's seen what's happened in New Orleans before. Yeah. I think he was a little freaked, don't you?
I think Hurricane Sandy had a lot to do with
it. I think it hurt the New York guys a lot worse than it hurt Pittsburgh, because Pittsburgh, they flew in the day of the game. Yeah. It was a 4 o'clock game. Mm-hmm. They practiced at home. They didn't leave early. I mean, they spent the night in their own beds.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen very often in the NFL.
It doesn't.
Like never.
It doesn't, which is why we were against the Steelers last week, because we thought that it was going to mess with their brains and their clock and
the way they did. The opposite.
And we didn't realize the impact that the hurricane was going to have. We thought we saw that game more of as an uplifting game for the city, whereas the impact of this hurricane is just, I mean, it's ongoing. It's very sad.
Right.
And
one of the things that we did see, too, a lot of empty seats last week.
Yeah.
A lot of empty seats. Really, it was a home game. It wasn't a home game. And you know what they said? A lot of gold towels in the stands. A lot of yellow towels. Terrible towels. I want to tell you something about Steelers fans. They're some of the best fans anywhere because they travel. They will go to Miami. They'll take 5, 6, 7 27s down there, and they'll take up an entire section in Miami or Tampa, and they make more noise than the fans that are there. They're great fans. They really are. Some of the best fans. I've heard, you know, both, but I've never had a problem with a Steeler fan. They're good people. They like to drink their Iron City beer, though.
They do.
You betcha. That's Minnesota. Anyway, it's not Iron City, though. Listen, Cincinnati?
Yeah.
They're done. You know, if he coached for anybody besides the Browns family, he wouldn't have a job. And when's the last time Cincinnati went to playoffs?
A couple years ago.
But
well, they went last year.
They were 1-0.
But the last time they won the division was three years ago.
But he does that like once every
4 years.
And then, you know, he keeps his job.
Right when they're like, does this guy need to be fired? And they'll win the division and make the playoffs. And
they have a problem. They don't have much of a running game. They've got an intermediate passing game. They can't go deep. And they got a great wide receiver who runs his mouth. Mm-hmm. I like the Giants today. I'm not taking them because the Giants, you know, they could be in the midst of a 4-game skid here. I hope not. But
you did pick them to go to the Super Bowl again, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
The NFC Championship game, is that what it was?
I think they're gonna win the East.
I remember
they're gonna win the East. No, you know who I picked? It was San Francisco.
Right. It was a couple weeks ago though.
Jesus,
you said something
you got
about
no
the
memory.
Giants. And then,
how old are you?
98.
Okay,
going on 27. And but you picked them a couple weeks ago. It was either to go to something, and you said, "Now don't get mad if a 4-game skid happens again."
Yeah, you know what? But is this the Bruce Hall jinx? No, they just can't afford a 4-game skid. Last year is a once in a lifetime thing.
Yeah.
That was a perfect storm. Think about it. They beat everybody, mm-hmm. and they won what, 5 games in a row, 7 games in a row at the end of the season. They didn't even have a great record. They had 7 losses. The good news for them is all 7 losses were during the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
In the postseason, they were 3-0, 4-0, right?
Yep.
They won the first game, they won the second game, they won the championship game, then they won the Super Bowl. So they won 4 playoff games. Oh, and they were all on the road, by the way. Mm-hmm. All on the road.
But we were breaking it down before the show. We were talking about who we thought might be a wild card, what the matchups might want to be.
I think the Giants are going to be a wild card. And, well, not a wild card. I think Giants will win the division.
Right, and they'll play a wild card. And,
that's right.
And the way that we saw it was it could potentially be a Giants-Packers.
Correct.
And we said that the Giants match up well with the Packers.
Yes, they
did. And
do.
Then we saw a Giants-49ers matchup.
Possible.
Which we all saw what happened last year. So the
little payback
the
there.
Stars could realign somehow.
There are three great teams in the NFC, and you just said all three of them.
Yeah.
Right there. I mean, in my opinion, those are the three teams. Let's go to the next game. I love that sound.
Next up, we have the Denver Broncos.
I want to hit
it
somebody.
Opened up at 4. I believe now it's 4.5 over the Carolina Panthers. The total here is 47.5. A little low, I think.
Well, you know, here's the thing. This team is rallying behind a guy that nobody had any idea if he could even play this year.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning has proven to be everything that everybody wanted Peyton Manning to be. This is the reason all these guys were flying him all over the country. This is why San Francisco worked him out in secret. They did.
Yeah.
This is why Tennessee. Look at Tennessee. How much better would they be with Peyton Manning? Now we see why Peyton Manning didn't want to go to Tennessee.
Yeah.
But Tennessee's got most of their receivers back.
Redskins met with who else?
Everybody.
Did Arizona meet with
Arizona met with him. A lot of people thought he was going to go to Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? That would have been, I understand why, because if you look at Arizona, quarterback is a little weird proposition there. But I think that Peyton made the right choice because I think in Denver he's got a combination of a running game with McGahee and the backup. He's got a good defense, good solid defense,
yeah.
got veterans on the defense, got young kids on the defense, got a decent offensive line. He hasn't been sacked in, like, what, two games?
But you also saw him kind of be able to do whatever he wanted in Denver.
Absolutely.
I think that
– well, it's John Elway.
I think
it's his best friend.
Right, and I think with what he saw, that Tebow was the quarterback there last year, and he saw how they changed the entire offense to meet Tebow.
Right.
So in the back of Peyton's mind, he's like, well, they did it for Tebow. They'll do it for me. They'll change everything around so I get to do whatever I want to do. And you saw that he even got to bring in his buddy, Jacob Tammy, as tight end, who he has chemistry with.
There's another buddy, too, Brandon Stokely, who's also one of his best friends.
Right.
And Brandon Stokely has made some big catches this year. Tammy, of course, is hurt, but he'll be back. At least that's what people who have Tammy in their fantasy are hoping. And if we're going to talk fantasy, we better do it in this segment or the next segment because we're going to have Bruce Bochy, the manager of the San Francisco Giants, on at 11:30. And we're going to talk to Bochy about the great ride that he took in Major League Baseball, winning the World Series for the second time in 3 years. It'll be good to get Boch on the phone and talk to him. I was going to do him next week, but you're going to be out of town next week, so I would rather have you in the studio at the same time. Let's do this. New England has gone to 14. We already picked them. I did. I picked Atlanta also. I picked the – we did the Atlanta-New Orleans game because that was early. I took the over there. That over could be monstrous.
Yep. I like the over there, too.
M-O-N-S-T-R-O-U-S.
I think we're pretty much on the same page today, with which is a good sign for people out there. Or maybe it's a bad sign,
you know
but
what?
I think it's a good sign.
You're not the only one that's agreeing with me. Some of the best minds in the country besides me and you are also agreeing with me, and I've already sent them texts. We're screwed. Let's go to the next game. Or not.
What do you want from us? What do you want from us, Matt?
Would you like me to say something, Matt?
It's very important.
For the first time in generations, the dream of homeownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect homeownership. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on AM 1230 WFAS. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And we're back here on AM 1230 WFAS, Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
Get a pen. We're going to be sprinting through these games because we're going to have Bruce Bochy on at 11:30. After the next break, we'll have Bochy on. He's supposed to call If he's in the shower, I'll have to call him in the shower. But listen, Tampa, San Diego is a game we're going over. San Diego's never lost to the Bucs in Tampa. They're 5-0. But the Bucs have scored, are you ready for this? This goes back to Dungy era stuff. 28-plus points, four games in a row for the first time ever. They've never done it. So this guy evidently knows what he's doing with this offense, because last year they couldn't score a point.
So the first time in generations?
For the first time in generations, these guys are moving the football. Greg Schiano's a rookie head coach. Nobody really likes him, but nobody cares. I think his players respect him. I think they're going to play for him. I love Tampa here. Because you know what? San Diego sucks. I'm sorry. Boach, I'm sorry. I know you live in San Diego. But San Diego, Norv Turner, you know, Smith, the general manager, everything about San Diego except Phillip Rivers, and I feel sorry for this guy.
Well, this is going to have to be for Augies then, because I'm on the Norv Turner side of this.
Well, this is for Augies when we go to New York, because you know, I'm taking Tampa minus the three. They're going to put it on them, and I'm taking the over.
I can't really.
You got to love the over here.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I like the over.
Don't you? 47 points? Are you kidding me? San Diego, if they're in the game, they're going to score 31.
I can't explain to you exactly. I'm passing on this as one of my top five plays, but I do have San Diego here, and it was going to be one of my top plays, but I talked myself out of it.
All right, I'm just taking San Diego three stars, and I'm taking the over for four stars.
For Tampa Bay?
Tampa Bay and the over. Let's go to the next game, Matt.
Next up, I have the Baltimore Ravens minus 8 over the Oakland Raiders. The total here is 46.5.
Well, you know what? We could go to this game if we had tickets, but I'd fall asleep by halftime, probably not get anything done. But I got to tell you, you know, you and I both always like the Ravens at home. It's 7.5 points. It hasn't moved all week. It's a pretty evenly distributed betting pool right now in Vegas. You know what I'm doing? I'm taking the damn Ravens.
Me too.
I'm taking them minus the 7.5, and I'm taking the over because I think the Ravens are going to – I think what they did this past week is they worked on their offense. They had to.
I have the over here.
And you don't like their defense anyway.
No,
they're missing two of their best players, but
– but they did get a good – they got Terrell Suggs back, who was the defensive MVP.
Absolutely. And I'm going to tell you right now, he's going to be a lot healthier this week. He's going to – you know, he's going to get better as we go on. I'm taking Baltimore for four stars. I'm taking the over for four stars.
I got the over, too.
Let's go to the next game.
Next up, the Detroit Lions minus 2 over the Minnesota Vikings. I don't have a total here. The site that I use doesn't.
It's not. Hold on, and I'll find it for you.
46.
The thing I like about Detroit right now is I've got a feel for them. You know, they've actually done me right, I think, the last 2 weeks. The thing about it is I laid off of them this week, and one of the reasons I laid off these guys is I just don't really trust this game. This game could go either way. Minnesota. You know, Christian Ponder has had two horrible games in a row.
Yep.
Horrible games. He's also, Percy Harvin's out for the game. That's seven, in my opinion, that's 7 points right there. Detroit needs the game. Minnesota, not as much as Detroit. I'm going to take Detroit here.
Yep, I have Detroit.
And too. I'm going to give the 2.5. Do you have 2.5? That's what I'm looking at.
I see
and
two.
And I'm seeing 46 points is what I'm seeing. What are you seeing?
I see two and no total.
Well, you know what? It doesn't matter.
It's pretty similar.
I'm taking Detroit minus a 2. They have to win the game. If they lose this game, they are definitely not going to be a wild card. And they're definitely going to be – I think they're out of the play, out of the division title already.
Yeah.
But Detroit's going to have to win 9 games minimum to get to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Take Detroit for 3 stars. Go to the next game, Matthew. Oh, by the way, let me say this about Minnesota. They still have Adrian Peterson.
They do.
So you want to play Adrian Peterson, okay, because he's like averaging. He's got more yardage than anybody in the league, and what, he had reconstructive knee surgery over a year. Not even a year ago.
Yeah, if you bench Adrian Peterson, you deserve to be slapped in the face.
Yeah, somebody needs to do it.
But this next game is the Seattle Seahawks minus 6 over the New York Jets. The total here is 38.5.
This may be the most underrated team, and they're not underrated anymore. Seattle has proven that they have a great head coach in Pete Carroll. They've proven they have a great defensive philosophy. And Pete's a defensive guy. He used to be. He was New York Jets defensive coordinator for 4 years. He was a head coach in New York for a year with the Jets. I like Pete. This is the first time that Pete has ever gone up against Mark Sanchez. Because, you know, he coached Mark Sanchez at USC. And I think that there's a lot of respect here on both ends. But you know what? If you're the coach and you know the quarterback, he's going to know exactly how to defend
Mark
Sanchez.
He does know the quarterback. And I've said it countless times that I believe that the Seahawks have the best speed pass rush in football.
They've got your buddy from West Virginia. What's his name?
Bruce Irvin.
He's tough. You know what? He could. How many? I think he's got like 5 or 6 sacks already. Might have more.
And you're seeing the impact of a loss like that at the college ranks in West Virginia. As they're absolutely terrible this year. So.
When you see, was he a junior?
No, I believe he was a senior.
But anyway, when you see a pass rush, like, well, you remember Clemens is the other guy that's doing all the damage there, and the Redskins let him go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not the only team that let him go.
Right.
I want to say Buffalo let him go. Somebody let him go, too. And then this guy is a journeyman defensive end. You know, now in a 3-4, of course, he plays on the inside or the outside because he's got good size. Clemens got to be 300 pounds, 305 pounds. But I got to tell you something. This whole Seattle team, it's raining in Seattle right now. It's chilly in Seattle. Who are they playing? The Jets?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jets have seen enough rain.
Yeah.
In my opinion, you and I both I like Seattle winning the game. I'm not going to touch 6 points because you know what happened this week. Cromartie came out and said they're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, they've been talking.
And you know, yeah, because they're coming off a bye week, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that. And the thing I liked about Rex's press conference or two that he's had since Cromartie made those statements, he handled it very well. You know, Rex has been humbled by this year. He has. He might have been humbled by a couple of years in a row. Rex is not a bad coach. I don't think he's a head coach. I mean, he's not my first pick to be a head coach, but he's a great defensive coordinator. You know what? This game could stay very low. If it's windy and raining, this could be a 13-10 game here.
Yeah, you know, I completely agree.
The difference is going to be Russell Martin with turnovers and Sanchez with turnovers.
Yeah.
Who's going to win the turnover battle? I think Seattle wins the turnover battle, don't you?
Yeah, I agree.
And who else is not playing for the New York Jets? Bart Scott. That's going to kill him. You've got to have Bart Scott in there. I mean, the poor Jets are just – they're just not going anywhere this year. So, New York Jet fans, you can throw it back in my face anytime you want, but they're not going anywhere. Let's go to the next game, and I'm passing on this game.
The next play is the San Francisco 49ers, minus 11 over the St. Louis Rams. The total here is 38.5.
You know what? You got 11.
I guess the line has moved now to 12.5.
Oh, you know what? Play it. This is my straight catch, homie. Yeah, it's straight Bruce Hall. Homie. You got it, Randy. I'm taking you, brother.
Straight cash, homie.
You got it, man. You have got it.
Straight cash, homie.
I love Randy. You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb. I did say Randy was going to catch a touchdown pass. Randy will catch another touchdown pass this week. And here, I'm going to give you a final. You ready for this?
Let's hear it.
27-3. That's going to be the final today. I don't see the Rams doing anything to this defense. Do you? And I don't see the Rams.
They're coming off of a bye, but no. Not a, no.
Hey, they get Amendola back, so we'll just break his other clavicle.
I can only play devil's advocate for so little like with the Rams.
But
like,
the Rams are 2-3 years away.
We both like the Rams going forward.
Later on, yeah, we do. 2016, 2017, they're going to be a team to be dealt with because Fish is there.
Yeah.
But right now, they can't play with San Francisco. Plus, coming off a bye week, Harbaugh, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Playoffs? You know.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs.
I've got.
You kidding me?
Let me tell you, this is going to be, in my opinion, the beatdown of the day. San Francisco is going to put it on the Rams. And I think the Rams might even be coming off a bye week, too, because I don't remember them even playing last week.
They're coming off a bye.
So, you know, they're going to be well rested, but who do you want? San Francisco or an indoor team? Not me. I'm taking San Francisco 27-3, 27-6, 31-6, 31-10, something like that. Next game.
Next up is the Dallas Cowboys -2 over the Philadelphia Eagles. The over-under here is 45.
You saw I changed my straight cash homie play. I couldn't do the Cowboys for a straight cash homie play. That would be like, you know, that would be like going to see a movie that you would hate to see. I mean, you know, I'm not going to go pay $20 for two tickets and $20 for popcorn and sodas and candy to go see a horror movie that sucks.
Yeah,
okay?
And if you've hit refresh on your if you're following us on sportsmancave.com, if you hit refresh on the picks, you know that I changed this pick. I got off of the Eagles.
I think that we were talking about it, and I'm glad you did get off the Eagles. Let me tell you, don't get us wrong, Philly people, and please don't come looking for me, okay? Because I've moved, okay? But here's the deal. Philly sucks. I'm sorry. You guys are terrible. You know, Michael Vick is getting – they're doing to Michael Vick what – I shouldn't say this. What he did to some dogs at one time. I don't like what I see. He has no offensive line.
Oh, man.
The defense is on the field 35 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. I'm taking Dallas for 5 stars in this game, but it is not my straight cash homie play. I've got some information here. And by the way, you want Monday night's game? Give me a call. You want Sunday night's game? Give me a call. 1-800-466-4748. 1-800-466-4748. Give me a call. I will give you the winners of those games. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on AM 1230 WFAS.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation anytime by calling 240-317-7294. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And we're back here on AM 1230 WFAS, Bruce Hall's Second Opinion, and we'll be joined shortly by the manager of the World Series champion San Francisco Giants, Bruce Bochy, as we had him on the line. And
we had him and we lost him.
That's right.
I asked him to hold on and he cut himself off. He'll be right back.
He said, hold on.
Hold on. He'll
click.
Be right back.
Do you know who I am?
But we're in the process here of getting ready for Sunday and waiting on Boach to call back. He should be calling back any second. He said nobody picked up, Matt. All right, you need to pick up. Hey, Boach? Hey, Boach?
What are you doing?
I'm doing good, buddy. You in San Diego, aren't you?
Yeah.
Just north of San Diego. I appreciate you coming on here. Bruce Bochy of the world champion San Francisco Giants on the phone. A little over a week ago, I was lucky enough to be in Detroit and watch your guys put away Detroit, the Tigers, who, you know, they did the best they could, but I tell you, it was almost like a perfect storm. You guys hit them with everything at the same time. You won the first two in San Francisco, and first game was like surreal. Tell me, what was it like, Bruce, to see the only guy in the history of World Series baseball, Pablo Sandoval, actually be at the plate with an opportunity to hit a fourth home run in a World Series game? Just tell me what that game was like. Was it like you weren't like somewhere outside of it watching it?
Well, going into that game, you know, we're facing Verlander and we have Zito going, and I know a lot of the baseball experts really didn't give us a chance. And you know, Zito, he throws an outstanding game. And here Pablo really steps up on the big stage and just has the game of his life. And he's an incredible talent. And, you know, he's always had this ability. But to do it in the World Series and to do it the first game of the World Series, I couldn't have been happier or prouder for him. For me, it was a very special time to see history. I mean, only three other guys have ever done this, and And, you know, to have the guy on my side really helps make it a little bit more special, too. But, you know, you look at what Pablo had to go through in 2010. I had to sit him on the bench because, you know, his play wasn't quite up to par. And here he gets another chance, takes advantage of it, and hits three home runs. So really special night.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Then you come back in game two and you make two runs stand up. And early in that game, I'll never forget, you know, I'm big on third base coaching because I'm old, but I'm a little older than you, but I still like to coach third base in the summer. And one thing that I would never do is I would never send a guy that runs like Prince Fielder home with nobody out. And they made a mistake doing that, made a great relay throw. It was like you drop on a board. The relay man was Craw, I guess, and they overthrew Crawford, and it went to the next relay guy. I guess it was Scudero, and he throws a strike home to Posey, sweep tags him, he's out. And that just knocked the wind out of him, and then you get a great pitching performance. Was that Vogie's game, or that was Vogie pitching, wasn't it? That was Madison. That's right, that was Madison. And let me tell you, the thing I loved about that was – you know, there was a period of time there in the weeks previous to that Madison was having some mechanical problems, correct? Tell me what you and what Dave Rigetti, the pitching coach, did to kind of work through that for Maddie. Because Madison Bumgarner, for those of you who don't know, was like the youngest guy to ever win a World Series game, except Babe Ruth, I think, 2 years ago. Wasn't that right? He's my son's age. Davis, who's 22, and I think Madison just turned 23 in August. Tell me what took place there to turn him around and get him to throw 6-7 shutout innings.
Well, it's so good athlete have occasionally happen to him that, you know, they hit a bump in the road. They get derailed. I mean, Linson come, Vogelsong, really – everybody on our staff, you know, had their moments, and Madison certainly was having a difficult time getting on track, and he had gotten out of sync with his delivery. He was, I think, getting a little concerned with his velocity, and what pitchers do is they try to add, and by trying to add, you know, they'll do something, get longer with their delivery, or in Madison's case, he was making a bigger turn on the mound, and so he was going side to side because of this movement he had when he was rotating almost around the mound and coming back toward the home plate. Instead of his direction going toward home plate, he was really spinning off, and consequently now his velocity is gone down a little bit with his location, and he was battling that, and Dave Rigetti, I have the best pitching coach in baseball, just did a great job of getting him on track with the bullpens that he had. We gave him, I think, 11 days off and worked him in the pen. And, sometimes we forget this kid. He's only, like you said, 23 because he's been around a while. But here he is going through, some confidence issues with what's happened. So through these bullpens, in video, he looked at what he used how he used to throw, and he was a lot simpler and stayed balanced over the mound and went toward home plate, kept his hand above the ball a little bit more than, dropping down as low as he had been doing. And after a couple bullpens, he was back on track. And so we were confident that he would give us a chance to win. Now, I didn't know he'd go out there and throw seven innings, give up two hits.
I'm going to tell you, that was amazing to me. That was just such
a great was. But, you know, Bruce, you talked about the play, and a play like that does so much for the pitcher. It just helps his confidence so much with that perfect relay we had where you talked about Blanco threw it to Scudero, who threw a strike, and Buster made a great tag. And here's the pitcher behind home plate watching all this, and you know what it does for the pitcher. It just pumps him up even more, and from then on, he just sailed.
Well, the greatest thing about Madison Bumgarner, and from what I understand, he's signed for a while. He's got, like, his first pretty good deal going on. One of the things a lot of people don't realize that watch Major League Baseball, they think that, oh, it's a real simple process. I want to talk just a little bit about your background. We'll come back to games 3 and 4 in a second. But, you know, you started out, you were with the Padres organization as a player or a coach from 1983 to 2006, correct, Bruce?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's 24 years. And I'll never forget because, you know, you and I, a lot of people don't know this, but we played Little League Baseball in the same league. We were all stars together. It was a lot of fun. I remember, I have a good long-term memory because the best time I ever had in my life was when I was a kid. And so I remember all this stuff. And the thing that I like so much about what you did is you were with the Padres for so long. You became a staple in that organization as a player, as a coach in the minor leagues, as a manager in the minor leagues, and then as a manager of the Padres. You took them to the World Series in 1998 with the Yankees. I was there. Davis was a little kid then. We went to New York, saw you guys play. That was when the Yankees first started their role. They had an unbelievable team. But you guys had a great run against two great teams that year. The last, the championship series being in Atlanta where you knocked them off, and they were unbeatable that year. I think they won over 100 games. But then, anyway, you know, you win another division title, a couple, with San Diego. San Diego was always this team, to me, that they were never really going to get too far because they didn't have a big budget. Is that correct? I mean, you know, they were trying – in other words, the owner was spending $30, $40 million a year, but he was trying to make sure he didn't lose money. Is that accurate?
Well, yeah, with it being a you know, smaller market, you know, we didn't have the revenue to spend
right.
like other clubs. But through our draft, we had a lot of good homegrown talent come up the system. And the last two divisions we won with San Diego, Jake Peavy was the ace on the staff. And, you know, he's a guy that came up through the San Diego system. But and we had a you know St. Louis just kept knocking me out, and here I was playing them again this year. I'm going, oh my goodness, they're going to knock me out again. They knocked me out three times in '96, and then the next 2 years, and I think '95, '96. I mean '05, '06, and so we just had a tough time getting through them. But once we went to the series in 1998 with Caminiti and Finley and all those players, Kevin Brown, John Moore's our owner. He just, he wanted to cut some salary. And so we went through a rebuilding stage. So it was a tough, 4 or 5 years there before we got back to being competitive with letting all those players go. And that was probably the toughest time in my career there.
Now you've been in San Francisco for 4 years. Is that correct?
Six years.
Okay, I've got my numbers wrong. Anyway, you've been there 6 years. I remember at the end of the season 6 years ago when you called me. I had called you to see what you were doing. You called me back, and you were in the process. I remember this, and you correct me if I'm wrong. But you had gone to the San Diego to management to try to work out an extension for your managing job. And from what what's that?
No, they called a meeting with me, Sandy Alderson and Kevin Towers.
Who was like the new? He was like the new vice president of operations or something, right?
He was our president,
right?
And we had just gotten beat by St. Louis, and called. They wanted to have a luncheon, Sandy had just said that we don't have plans to extend your contract, which I had not asked for plans. I had one more year in my contract.
Right, I remember that.
And really, I don't want to get into the whole conversation.
Sure.
But through the conversation, I pretty much, said, well, it sounds like, maybe I should look elsewhere. And we were in agreement. I had one more year and I would have come back, but, they let me really, at that time, if any club had any interest, they were going to let me talk to them. In San Francisco, Brian Sabian, after talking to him, convinced me to go up there. And it was a great move for me because I want to be part of a story franchise that probably had a little bit more revenue or ability to compete on a consistent basis. And, of course, you know, it worked out great for me with this move. And it's never easy to make a move when you've been somewhere over 20 years. But, you know, change is good sometimes. Not just for me, but for the club. I mean, those guys have had me a long time, so it might have been good for them to hear a new voice. But the whole thing, the way it went down, it could work out better for myself. And, you know, and that's why I believe things happen for a reason. And it was time for us to make a change. And it took me a little bit by surprise initially, but couldn't work out better.
Well, I got to tell you, you made a good friend in Brian Sabian. The two of you, in the 6 years you've been there, I remember your first year, Barry Bonds was still there. And, you know, the clubhouse was a different kind of place. I don't know what the deal was, but it seemed to me that Bonds had another year. I think he set the record the year you were there, right? First year?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I remember you playing. I remember you told me one day you went out and played with Barry. You had no problems with Barry. Barry was a good, you know, good kid and everything. But then the next year, Bonds is gone. And now all of a sudden, it's a whole new situation in the clubhouse. Now it's like everybody is kind of on the same page. And that's what I saw. And then all of a sudden, you know, you guys started building a club. Now, you've always had a history, the Giants have, of having great pitching. You draft good pitchers. You draft these big power guys. You seem to always have more pitching than everybody else. And for about, even in 2010, Boach, that team wasn't a great hitting team, but your pitching was top-notch. Wouldn't you agree? And they kind of carried the rest of the team along with them, but you got some timely hitting. You had a couple of real good free agent situations like Cody Ross and a couple of other guys you picked up. And all of a sudden, you guys, you know, get hot right at the right time and you win the series in 2010. You were born probably after the last time the Giants won a World Series, right? 1954. I was born in 53. So it had been that long for all the San Francisco fans to get back to a situation where they win a World Series. How did this year compare to that year? Because this year, to me, seemed almost like it was two seasons. You know what I'm saying? It seemed like it was the season when Melky was playing and then the season after that when you rebuilt the team again. How do you compare the two, and how many of your guys were on both? Because I can't even – some of these guys I thought were there, but like Brandon Crawford, he was in the minor leagues in 2010, right?
Yeah, right, right. And, you know, the preface this whole – before I go into that is that Brian Sabian, our general manager, I just hope he gets recognized for what he's –
it's unbelievable.
Done in transforming this team into what it is because – the Giants were known for slugging with Bonds and Kent, Aurelia, you know, these great, and they had some great teams and went to the World Series in 2002. But, you know, players get older and it was time to make a transition. And Brian not only made a transition, but completely changed the philosophy of what we wanted to be. We wanted to be more pitching and defense instead of trying to slug it. Particularly in our division, particularly in our ballpark, which is more conducive, you know, for the pitcher. So, and he did that through the draft. And if you look at, it's amazing, our homegrown talent. You know, you go from Lincecum to Kane, to Bumgardner, to Crawford, to Belt, you know, Sandoval's, Posey. You know, there's not many clubs that have that many homegrown players like we do. So it was done in the right way. So our scouting director, our scouts, our development people all deserve so much credit. But it starts with Brian Sabian. So I'm hoping that he gets recognized for what's happened up here in San Francisco. Now, as far as 2010 to 2012, you're right. Two different clubs. 2010 had a little bit more power. Our pitching was probably a little stronger in 2010. And I agree with you. 2012 was probably two different seasons for us. Here we had Melky Cabrera, who was kind of leading the way and just having a great year. And then we just got, we got hit.
Cold
right in the
cops,
face.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I had found out an hour and a half before the game when Brian came in and said, you can't play Melky. And so we got together as a club and said, hey, listen, you know, it's not it's not important that this has happened. It's how we're going to deal with it. And, you know, we're loaded with talent here. And the Dodgers have just made that blockbuster deal. So, you know, or I think we're getting ready to. And anyway, when we talked as a club, we said, we'll get the talent, do this. You know, it's going to be up to us all hunker down. And I'll try a little bit harder. And it was unbelievable how Pagan took off at that time. He just really led the way at that time. And, of course, we get Scudero coming in and helping us in tents. But it was really two different clubs. And it really amazed me how well we did play from that point on and how guys really did, you know, give up or listen to the naysayers going, the Giants are done. They've lost Melky because he was having an incredible year. He was leading the league in about everything except home runs. And but these guys found a way to get it done.
Yeah, they did. And I got to tell you, I was there for the two games in Detroit. I was actually in Detroit five nights. I should have just come back with you guys and gone to the parade. But we couldn't get back.
Yeah, you should have. You know, not interrupt. I'm going to go back. You were born in 53. So
right.
I think
November.
When we played Little League, I should have checked your birth certificate. You're a lot older.
I was a foot taller than you back then. Then the next time I saw you, Boach, you were in Tidewater and AAA briefly with the New York Mets because I want to say you got traded from Houston to New York. And I was there with a girlfriend. From you know that was in college at the time, and I saw you, and that was when I made contact with you again. And then, of course, when you started managing in San Diego, I made sure I got to see you a lot. I can't thank you enough for all the fun we've had and all the opportunities. But get back to Game 3 and 4 in Detroit. Let me tell you something: you guys never took your hands off the throat of the Detroit Tigers. They were done. And I'm going to tell you this because, you know, you know this, Boach, because I'm a Washington National season ticket holder. And you're on the runway waiting to see where you're going to fly, correct, after you lock up the division series or the first round of the playoffs. And I'm like, you know, we're up 6-0 on St. Louis. And I got idiots around me talking about, well, are you going to be, can you get us, dude? Can you do this? I'm like, dude, it's the third inning. You know, this is baseball. There's no clock there. And the Nats ended up losing. Well, in my opinion, St. Louis is more of an, look more like, to me, they look more like an American League team. As a matter of fact, they reminded me of the Tigers. You guys have great athletes, great, think of the guys you got. Pagan, you got Brandon Crawford. Even Pablo is super athletic. Brandon Belt may be the best fielding first baseman in the game. He will win gold gloves before it's over. Scudero is like getting a batting coach with a perfect swing for all the younger hitters. I call it osmosis. You and Sabian put a team together that was so much more athletic and so much more of a real baseball team that I just didn't think that a chance. And you remember in game four, after we win, I think we won 2-0 in game three to make it 3-0. In game four, we're not having a great game right off the get-go. They get the lead, then we tie it up, and then the next thing you know, we go into extra innings. Well, you guys live for that. You've got the bullpen. You got the Jeremy Affelts, the Romos. You know, you've always had these guys, the Javi Lopez's. I guess now, once you win the World Series, you go back, you have this parade. The first one had to be in 2010, Boach. You've been in two parades now. You have two rings, okay? You might not have the second ring, but you're getting one. You'll get it soon, right?
opening day.
I've seen your ring. You know, you said something funny to me once. You said, here, take my ring. I said, where's my ring? You said, here, take mine. I said, I'd have to use that as a necklace. I can put my wrist through your ring. Your hands are so big. But I got to tell you, which parade do you think was the better parade? Or were they just two totally different parades? Because
well,
I saw the second
similar.
One on TV.
Yeah, similar. I mean, it was incredible and amazing, in fact, that we had just won 2 years ago. So, you know, I'm thinking, well, it just happened. And most of these are fans that, you know, that went through all the effort to go to the parade the first time are going to say, well, I've been there, done that. I'm not going to get up at 5:36 in the morning and start lining up. But lo and behold, there they were. I think it was even bigger. I think there were more people. I think probably what happened is a lot of people that didn't go were upset they didn't go to the first one, and so they came. And so it was really very similar in the size and the enthusiasm. I mean, to see how much you impacted all these fans, all these people, it just gave you a great feeling. And to see them come out, they are part of our team. We're sold out every game.
Absolutely.
So they're part of our club, and they play a critical role in our success. We know it. And so it's just a special day. And you talk about the ring, you talk about the last pitch of World Series, but I guarantee you, when you talk to the 2010 players, and if you talk to the 2012 players, they'll say one of the special moments of the whole deal was the parade.
You know what? Those kids had so much fun, and Romo's probably going to get a reality show sooner or later. Hopefully you'll get, you know, Brian Wilson back next year. Listen, Boach, I just want to say this. To me, you're the best manager in baseball. I know baseball. I watch your players' manager. The whole idea, I think you have the same rules I do. Have fun, play as hard as you can, give me all you got, and be on time. And major leaguers are always on time or they're not major leaguers. You've won 1,360 baseball games as a manager. In my opinion, you're a Hall of Famer. And I'm going to tell you what, you make the Hall of Fame, we're going to have one hell of a luncheon in Bailey's Crossroads Little League back here when you get done. You
understand? I appreciate those comments, and then believe me, I'm humbled by if that's ever mentioned, because I don't see it and I don't think about it. But I'm blessed to be doing what I do, and to have the support of Brian Sabian, who's not only my boss, he's a friend. He's a guy that we spend a lot of time together. We talk about the team. But not to go in all that, but I appreciate all that. And it's just, I just consider myself so fortunate to not only be doing what I'm doing, but to have a chance to win the World Series like Brian does for us.
Well, you're the best. And listen, I just want to make a shout-out to your wife, Kim, who is, for anybody who's never seen your wife, she's an 11 on a 10 scale. You and I both married up. You got a son, Greg, who played a little ball, and I want to say he's probably is he still a fireman?
He's a paramedic. Hoping to become a fireman.
And and your son, Brett, is actually probably going to make it to the majors here in a couple of years. Bruce, I got to let you go. We're going back on in New York. But thank you so much for your time, and go Giants, buddy.
Thanks, Bruce. Good talking with you.
You got it.